Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, here to meet your urgent and emergent medical needs, whether they are COVID-19 related or not. Medical emergencies happen when you least expect them. Whether it's a stroke, heart attack, illness, or injury, San Juan Regional Medical Center's caregivers are here to provide care to you and your loved ones. Find out more online at sanjuanregional.com. It's 8 o'clock. It is Thursday morning, April 15th. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin. Thanks for tuning in to KSJE 90.9 FM over the air here in San Juan County, New Mexico, 103.3 FM over the air in Durango, Colorado, and streaming everywhere on the planet from our website, ksje.com. Welcome also to our viewers who are watching us visual radio program. We are streaming the video live today to the KSJE Twitter account, our YouTube channel, and our Facebook page. We're glad that you are with us, everybody, because we have a special guest on a Thursday for a change. Normally, I get to visit with Superintendent Kirk Carpenter on Tuesdays, but today we're mixing it up a little bit. He is here on a Thursday, so we'll get an update from Superintendent Kirk Carpenter, the Aztec School District, of course. That is coming up in the next few moments right here on KSJE. And then, of course, at 9 a.m., streaming on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. It's our COVID-19 community information program. This morning, we're going to be hearing from Farmington Mayor Nate Duckett. We'll be talking with the San Juan County Office of Emergency Management and also getting an update on some of the changes, positive changes, I should say, at assisted living centers in the region. That is coming up this morning, again, live streaming at 9 a.m. You can always hear it on the radio at 5:06 p.m. And, of course, you can hear it earlier on our partner radio station, KNMI. They air this program at noon through a partnership with them, and we appreciate their partnership. So that's coming up today on KSJE. On the radio at 9, Mick Hess is taking us roving with the arts. It's our classical music program, of course. Today, Mick is sharing more string quartets from the great Haydn. That's coming up today, 9:06 on KSJE. And don't forget, of course, we invite you to connect with us on all sorts of social media. In addition to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, you can check us out on Instagram as well. Weather forecast, mostly sunny skies outside at the moment, 50 degrees in Farmington, winds 6 miles per hour, but that's not going to last very long, I'm afraid. More gusty winds forecast for this afternoon. We could see gusts up to 45 miles per hour with more of that blowing dust in the air. 64 degrees for a high today in Farmington with sunshine, 35 and windy overnight tonight. Tomorrow, less windy but cooler, sunshine and 58 on Friday. Maybe some rain or frozen stuff overnight, 38 for a low on Saturday, a chance of rain or snow showers with a high of 57, chance of showers again on Sunday with a high of 56, and then by Monday, mostly sunny skies and a high of 63 degrees. Well, let me turn to my guest who is here with me this morning. As I mentioned, usually we get to visit on Tuesdays. Mixing it up this month, and Kirk Carpenter is here, and it's Thursday. Check your watches, everybody, but good to have you no matter what day of the week it is, Mr. Carpenter.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be here, Scott, and we appreciate you allowing us to come in and talk about the school district, so thank you.
You bet. Well, and there's been a few things that have been happening in the school district since last we spoke. I guess I always say you're irreplaceable, but the school board has proven me wrong. Yeah. You've been replaced because they've selected your next superintendent in Aztec.
They have, and they've made a great choice. Kevin Summers is the gentleman's name. He's actually from the Bloomfield Municipal School District, a very talented administrator, has a lot of great ideas. I think we're spending some time together already. We'll do that throughout the rest of my tenure, which my last day right now is June 4th. And then he'll take over the reins. But looking forward to working with him. Like I said, he's a great administrator. And so Everybody is replaceable, and I tell people this, it's a step up.
No.
So a lot of people may argue with that, but I mean that sincerely. He's going to do a great job and have some good experience. And, you know, the bottom line is he has great people around him. And as a leader, you're only as good as who you surround yourself with. And if I've done anything well, it's because I've listened to my people. And so he's coming into a good situation. And it's a good district. We have a lot of things we do need to do better. But I think that's with any district or anywhere. Because if you ever stop trying to get better, then obviously that's when bad things happen. But it's going to be a great adjustment for him. However, I think it'll be a smooth one again, because we have a lot of our people that have been there for a long time. And that doesn't mean you stay status quo. It doesn't mean that you don't open up to new ideas. But understanding the tradition of a district, the story of a district, and all the things, it's already there. And so I'm excited for him as he starts his superintendency. And like I said, he's a great man and a great administrator. So I know he'll do great things for the district.
Well, much good luck to you and to him in the transition process. And I think that is really important when you're talking about the leadership of a local school district, to have some crossover and to be able to at least kind of understand your policies and how to move the district, to keep moving it forward. And, of course, he's a local person and certainly knows from his experience at Bloomfield Schools kind of what the area is like and some of the unique challenges that we have. So I think that will be a strength for Aztec Schools as well.
It definitely will be. And with all new people, they bring in their own vision. They may have a different mission, and that's fair. I think that's appropriate. It's a new beginning. And I think with that in itself should bring some excitement. Fortunately, in our county, and what's nice is a lot of our school districts do a lot of the same kind of work. And so it's not that new flavor of the month that comes in. It's something that will be hopefully done deeper as far as the type of work. You know, I think we've always talked about, we don't want to go 2 miles wide. We want to go 1 mile and go a mile down, that type of thing, and really dig down into what we're doing and get better at it. And I think that will be the same case. And in no way, shape, or form, want to speak for Superintendent Summers as he gets ready to come in. But there's just a lot of work, again, that's very common. We've collaborated so much over the years, and all of that, to me, is beneficial. I think it'll be beneficial as he makes his transition, and beneficial to our staff as well, because with new leadership, there are people that are a little bit concerned about what's this going to be like or what's going to happen. But rest assured, he's going to get in the district. He's already sent out some great positive letter to the staff talking about wanting to meet him, talk with him. I know he's planning on coming over and working with directors and principals and talking with them. And so everything that, if you're looking at a transition, not that I'm one to judge, I think there's a lot of great things happening, and he's doing a lot of things right already to try to get to know the district and come in with his philosophy. And it's a marriage, and that's what it needs to be. It needs to be and when I say a marriage, it needs to be a good marriage, because when we know some marriages may not be as good as they need to be, but this one needs to be a good one. And so he's doing all the right things to get all the people on board and have his conversations with them. And again, we're going to spend some time together. He doesn't need a lot of coaching. I think it's just a matter of understanding, like I said, the story of the district, where we've been, some of the plans that we had going forward, because we still have to plan. And he's going to be involved in some hiring. You know, we want to bring him on even early to allow him to develop somewhat of a team, because we recently made some decisions where we hired an associate superintendent in some of these other positions. But we have a principal position open, a career technical education position open, and we absolutely want him involved with that, because that's important for him as a superintendent to also start building a team that he is familiar with and has had input on.
Well, and you mentioned having your team around you has provided some good advice and help with your leadership, and I guess the same would go for the new superintendent.
Yes, and I mean this sincerely. You know, there's as a superintendent, I've never seen myself as a boss. I've seen myself as support staff. Now, that to be said, there's always decisions that you have to make from a superintendent's office, and I stand by those decisions. But very few decisions have ever been made unilaterally, and that's because of the great staff we have. I mean, no matter what we're facing, our people, they are reacting to the situation quickly in a positive way because of all the planning we've done together. And that doesn't happen unless you have great people. And I can't say enough about our leadership and our staff, the district. I mean, I just, there'll be time for me to probably make other statements about it. But I've said it many times, and I mean it. I've been blessed by that district more than I'll ever have blessed it. And it's just been very fortunate, but it's because of all the people that have surrounded me as a leader and made me a better leader. You would always hope that as a superintendent or somebody that is in leadership that you have the ability to mentor and impact people, and I believe that's probably happened, but I also know that that's been reciprocal because the people over there, teachers, staff, students, our cabinet have absolutely made me a better person, not only professionally but personally.
Well, we look forward to the transition. It is a well-deserved retirement for you, Mr. Carpenter, who have been in education for I don't even know how many years. I didn't even want to count that high. But a long time and a long history with the Aztec School District. Yes. So anyway, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'll put in the request, I think, again, to maybe we can bring the new superintendent over next month when we visit, if that's possible.
So I think it is possible. And just so you know, I'm working with you on that and already kind of put a bug in his ear about maybe coming over next month, because I think that would be great.
Very good. Well, again, the monthly spot is always open for the Aztec School District as the school year commences in the fall, and we'll certainly make that invitation to him personally once he is installed as superintendent. But some transition for Aztec Schools. But in the meantime, you're still leading the district and working on budgets and dealing with the state and all those things that you and I talk about seemingly on a regular basis these days. And so you were talking before we came on the air just a bit about some changes to the school calendar. And I think the idea was to maybe extend the school year for a certain number of days to make up maybe for this past year and all the disruption that we all know has happened for your staff and your students and everybody like that, and you're getting some direction from the state, and they are giving you some suggestions and then maybe some new suggestions.
Yeah, the calendar of all the things in my role as superintendent, the calendar is always one of the biggest issues you deal with, and for many reasons. But we did opt to extend the school year 10 days. Now, that's not extending it 10 days longer than this year. We made the decision this past school year to extend 10 days from the 19-20 school year. And we're maintaining that. The program we're involved with is called the Extended Learning Time Program. And as part of that requirement, we must have 10 more academic days than we did, like I said, in 19-20. So that sounds funny saying 19-20. The 19-20 school year.
2019-2020 school year, yes, sir.
Because I'm not that old. Some people
right.
look at me and think I'm that old, but I'm not that old.
Understood.
But to us, it's important. It's important because what drives us in our district, the decisions we make, whether it's budget, whether it's personnel, is our main motto is improve student learning for all students. And so every decision we make, that's our litmus test. That's what we look at. In fact, as I sit here today on my whiteboard in the superintendent's conference room, that statement is written there, and it's been there for years. But the bottom line is we did make a decision to do that. It has been very controversial with a lot of folks in our district. We're not trying to take summer vacations away. We're not trying to take time away, put more on teachers. But what we are trying to do is improve learning for our students, and our students have lost a lot. So even this year, moving into next year, it's, to me, just absolutely imperative. The governor made an interesting line item veto. Because, as you know, school districts run 5 days a week. And there's some that run four, but you have to be a certain size to do that. And they have longer hours. She put a line item veto to allow school districts that next year they could have a four-day face-to-face and then have a day of what we're calling virtual learning. I spoke against that, even to our association. And the reason why is if we have students in virtual learning, on, let's just say, every Friday like we did this year, that's 36 days that we miss kids. That's over 6 weeks that we don't have face-to-face instruction. In a time where we're at with what we've gone through, and let's just speak about education in the state, there's a lot of, you know, I do not believe that New Mexico is where we are rated in the country, but it just does not make sense to me to even consider that. Now, I understand teachers need planning time, they need PLC time. We have that time. We have the PLC days on Mondays. That's where we're going back to next year. And we're doing a lot of things differently. We're going to begin a virtual learning model in a program where we specifically have teachers designed to do more of a synchronous type of learning than we did this year. So, yeah, there were some big changes that the governor made on that. And so we'll see what happens. But our calendar is passed, but it was also passed to allow the new superintendent to make some adjustments if he so chooses. So we'll see what happens. But I stand firm in what we've done in our decision, because there's a lot of other impacts. It could affect our transportation budgets moving forward. It's just not as simple and as clean. And again, it's not us not listening to teachers, because we got a lot of feedback and surveys from them on supporting them because of the virtual days were so valuable. But it's also trying to do the right thing for kids. And as far as the budget, it's going to come out, I think, better than we even thought it would, which is nice. The unit value is what we operate on, and they were expecting a 4 to 6% increase in that. We got a 5. And so that will help us stay whole as a district, because we're having to use enrollment numbers of this year to calculate for next year. But with the increase in the unit value, I think our budget's going to be in a positive side of things. And so that's also important. I know they're looking at raises of a 1.5% for all staff. That's also, I think, important for staff, because they have been working hard. And so I think, given all that we've been through with the pandemic, all the unpredictability and all the issues that have gone with it, there's some positive things coming out of it. And I've said it before, even educationally, I think there's going to be a lot of positive things that come out of this if we allow ourselves to move forward. And that's why I've always said this: we're not going to go back to normal, we're going to be forward normal, because we're going to be farther advanced in what we do in instructional delivery and all the other things we have to do, planning, preparation, all those things. And it's not to make light of the pandemic, but it's to say that if we don't learn from some of this and we don't take the positives, you know, life's too short and there's a lot of negatives out there. So from budget to the calendar, those are some of the things that have been happening, and we're moving forward.
Good to know. And I know some of the budget issues were really concerning to you because of the tying it to the enrollment numbers, which of course are down, not just for your district, but I think for districts around the state, probably around the country, right? And so that would have been a major budgetary hit, I guess, if something else hadn't changed in the formula.
It would have been devastating. We would have been over $1 million short. And that would have been probably 20 positions. And when I say 20 positions, we have some administrative positions we can cut, but we have a pretty much a skeleton crew there. We don't have a lot of support staff in offices. When I first started at central office, we had 5 people in the business office. Now we have 3. So, I mean, we have done a lot of reducing. It would have been absolutely devastating. And the enrollment numbers, that's why we tried to fight to stay whole. But what they did is, again, they adjusted the unit value, and so that's getting us to where we are really considered whole as far as funding. But it absolutely, it would have been just devastating. And you always try to keep cuts away from the classroom. That's the last place you cut, and we've always said that. When we make cuts, the classroom's the last place we look. But unfortunately, the only way school districts can really cut funding is with personnel costs, because that's 92% of our budget. And we would have definitely had to cut some classroom teachers. That's another reason why we're starting and looking at, and other school districts are as well, a virtual type of learning model, because we're going to have students who want to stay virtual. We need to maintain those students within our district for enrollment, not for purposes of funding only. That's a huge issue, but for purposes of learning and making sure we're connecting our kids in our district. And maybe even attracting more if that happens. That's not our intent, but that's something that we need to have and we need to offer, because education's changing. And I'm not saying we'll go to a virtual type learning, because I spoke for the face-to-face. That's absolutely the most beneficial. But we're also going to have some families that are not going to send their students back. And so how do we provide education to those students? Because those students, too, need to make sure they're getting learning. That's going to improve our democratic process, our economic process. And if we don't educate students, regardless of whether they're coming to us face-to-face or providing some kind of virtual learning, to me, that's negligence. We have to do that, because we owe it to our community, we owe it to our people within our community, and we owe it to our kids.
And I guess that's part of a larger conversation about public schools in general, Mr. Carpenter, in that you are charged with educating every student that walks through your door. You don't have an admission process and things like that. You don't turn kids away if they're coming to you for an education. And whether or not that student performs better in a face-to-face environment or a virtual environment, it sounds like you and other districts, of course, too, are trying to meet those students where they would best succeed.
We are. And it goes back to that notion of forward normal. If we go back and do the same things we've always done, we're going to get what we've always got. And I'm obviously coining a phrase that's been said many times. But if George Washington came back to life today and walked into our classrooms. In many cases, he's going to see the same things he saw when he walked into classrooms when he was president. Kids sitting in rows, and it's a sit and get. We can't do that to our kids. The pandemic has forced us away from some of that. And what we can't do is think that we can go back to what was considered normal, which was not the best benefit. And I'm not knocking our teachers. Our teachers are incredible. They're doing incredible things. But again, the pandemic has forced us to be more creative. It's changed our delivery models. We're meeting kids where they need to be met. I often think too many times that we slow education down for our students. With all the technology that's available, and technology is not the answer. We still need to have kids think. But the reality of it is when they go out and problem solve in the world, and that's what we need to do, more problem solving, they have technology at their hands. We can't limit that when they come to the schoolhouse and walk through the schoolhouse doors. And too many times we do that. And I think with the pandemic, it's forced us to deliver things, have them do a lot more collaborative learning in many respects, a lot more independent thinking, utilizing technology, and we have to find the middle ground. Nothing replaces face-to-face. Nothing replaces the soft skills of being able to interview, look people in the eyes, have conversation. We never can move away from that. We have to reinforce, I think, those things even more because of technology. So I'm not just saying we shift to technology, but technology is a great tool that can speed up learning. And to me, when I'm not saying speed up to get through curriculums, but it allows you to go deeper because you have better things at hand. You're not spending 30 minutes in a library finding a book. Nothing against libraries. We need to still read. But you can find that same information instantly, and that improves and enhances and deepens the learning. And that's what I think we have to do. And though I can say these things, I'm not the expert. The experts are in the classroom, and they're doing great things, and I know they're going to carry some of this forward. So even though I'm leaving the district, I'm excited to see where it goes and a lot of districts go. If education in America doesn't improve after the pandemic, even though we've lost some learning time, but if we don't improve over the next several years, shame on us, because there are a lot of things that have changed and a lot of things we've had to do differently, and we cannot go back to just the old sit and get. We need to continue doing the great things that are happening across this country, because they are, and things will get better. And I am convinced that American education is going to get better.
Very good. My guest this morning, Superintendent Kirk Carpenter is here. He is the superintendent of the Aztec School District, of course. And I want you talking a lot about the pandemic, of course. And unfortunately, that has impacted at least one of your schools. And I wanted to ask you a bit about that decision. There's a story in the newspaper this morning about, I think, a total of 8 schools in San Juan County that are closing for face-to-face instruction because of an outbreak of COVID cases in either staff, students, or both. You have one in Aztec schools that you had to close as of, I believe, yesterday, and will be closed for the next 3 days, 2 days?
That'll return on Monday.
This is Park Avenue. We're talking about Park Avenue Elementary School.
Yeah, and we had another incident at Kugler that's taking out probably close to 100 kids and 6 staff. I mean, I think what people need to understand is one case, and in these instances, that's what it is, one case. Can impact a school in that way. And that's why, again, my continual public service message of being vigilant and taking care of things. If kids are sick or if people are having tests, don't come back to school until things are solved, your test results, etc. And in this case at Park, that wasn't the case. It was a case of somebody just not feeling well, then went through and had some symptoms and found out they were positive. But because of the impact and the close contact, that's what can happen. In fact, it can be devastating across the district. When we have to quarantine students, we have staff members at other sites. Those are their students. And unless they have ways of taking care of their children, that removes other teachers from other places. And so we don't know of any cases where now kids have got COVID because of this. But just because, again, that close contact, even though we're cohorting kids, there's some ways you can't cohort kids when you have to move them around and do other things. And because of that, it can absolutely be devastating. And again, it takes one person. That's how serious this is. And the restrictions were required to follow and will continue to follow. The same thing happened at Kugler. And then, you know, unfortunately, we had a sporting event where there was a case, and that affects the teams. And that does not mean that we need to move away from what we're doing with face-to-face. We have plans in place. Our team did a tremendous job. We got noticed right when the buses were rolling up and parents were dropping off, and immediately we were able to turn some kids back to go home. And then the buses, we had to take those kids, shelter them, call parents, and the staff did a beautiful job. I went over there and at the tail end of it, and that to me is where I'm talking about with the pandemic. That's a negative situation in many respects, but the positives of seeing a team work together, the collaboration, taking care of kids, putting a plan into place, because we had our plans, we've been planning, our people reacted. They didn't have to sit and think about what to do. They did it, and they did it very well. So I commend them all, both Kugler and at the Park Elementary. But it's unfortunate.
I understand. And this is, I guess, one of the situations that happens when we want to reopen schools, right? And you have a plan in place for if a student comes in or a teacher that has tested positive or gets a positive test, you have to contact all those folks that were potentially in contact with that individual, whomever it was, to notify them. That's a state requirement.
It's absolutely a state requirement, and we're just following it. I know some parents have hard times with it, but we try to reiterate and not pass the buck, if you will, that this is exactly what we're having to do. And like all districts, I mean, everybody has a plan. And you'd love to prevent it, but you have to mitigate it. And if you can't mitigate it in a very orderly fashion, that adds to some of the concerns, the chaos, and other issues. But that's something that, again, our staff has been very good about. I mean, we've prepared for the worst, and you hope for the best. But hope's not a strategy. It's not. And so you better have things in place. And we've continually met weekly to say, here's the situation. You need to be able to shift on a dime if you have to change to virtual, if you have to do this, if you have an outbreak. It's in place, and then it's a matter of just, again, reacting to the situation and putting things into play, whether it's cleaning, whether it's calling parents. It wasn't something that we were trying to figure out how to do. We just went and did it because we had already talked about it, we had already planned for it, and there's always things you do better. I think as we look at the situation, we say this could be done better, this could have been done better, but yesterday I said it to an individual at the Public Education Department. If there's a district that got that information in that short a time and did a better job of doing what we did yesterday, show me. And I'm a very humble person, and it's not about me, it's about our people. But that is a true testament to the quality of people we have and how they do their job. And no matter whether it's in the classroom or in situations like this, we're going to have cases. We know that. I've said it all along. The most important thing is you have a plan in place to minimize as much as you can. We still have very high cleaning standards, and in fact, more so than a lot of places, a higher standard of that. That can only do so much. It's the other pieces. But when something happens, we need to be able to deal with it, and we did, and they did a great job at it. And again, it's unfortunate. It absolutely is. But we're trying to minimize it as much as possible with even the things we do prior to anything happening, like cohorting and some of those things. But in some cases, that's just not as possible as it may seem.
Right. But it sounds like this all happened, as you mentioned, as students were arriving for the school day and buses were arriving and things like that. So I guess for parents, they probably didn't get a lot of notice that kids were coming home or get back in the car and go back home. And I guess if you hadn't acted so quickly, the numbers of potentially infected students and staff could have been even larger.
Absolutely. We literally, it may have been 7:45, and it wasn't negligence on anybody's. It's a matter of when you get your results back. And when we got notified to say, hey, this is a situation, there's a positive case, immediately people were rolling into action. Mr. Akre out of his office, our human resources office, and our executive director of human resources has done an outstanding job, along with our health coordinator, Ms. Erin Rakowitz. And I mean, I could give you a who's list of doing it, but they were on top of it immediately. We rolled out a plan, we talked, we rolled out other plans, we touched base, made adjustments as we needed to. I mean, this affects a lot of things. We have kids that may still be on campus at lunchtime, so we still have to provide meals. I mean, the amount of planning and the amount of implementation when something like this happens, I don't think anybody truly realizes. But the bottom line is, if you don't plan ahead for the unplanned, you're going to be in a difficult situation to make things happen in the right way. And again, the staff just did a tremendous job. So it was, the timeliness of it is never the best. I call it the perfect storm. It's kind of like calling school or delaying school when things are good and all of a sudden the buses are out and the weather turns bad. This obviously is much more serious in many respects, but when it happens, you take a deep breath, you step back, and you start putting a plan into place. And if you don't have a plan to put in place, that's when things are going to be chaotic, and that's when people have a right to be upset, because that never should be the case. You can't plan for everything. But if you have a foundational plan, you can take those foundational plans and manipulate them enough to make some adjustments to the situation, and that's exactly what happened yesterday.
Sure. Very good. Well, and certainly you can understand from parents' standpoint, too, that they had to change their plans.
Absolutely.
If they had to suddenly find a place for their child or stay home from work or whatever.
Well, and that's the case, Scott. I think across our county, that, you know, child care and some of those things, it's very difficult. And that's why workplaces they look different. That's why they should look different right now. It is difficult. We're not back to normal. We're not close to that. Even in the fall, will we be? And that's why through all of this, we call it the Gumby rule. You have to be firm but flexible. And people don't remember Gumby. He's a little figure that's kind of made out of, I think, Play-Doh or whatever you may have been made out of.
Green and rubbery. I remember Gumby.
Okay.
We're dating ourselves, both of us.
I know,
but
we
the
are. Yeah.
Rest of the audience has no idea.
Well, but the rest of the audience, honestly, Scott, we talked about technology. They can Google it.
They can.
So they can just come up and they'll see.
Yes.
But that's what we've said. We have to be firm but flexible. And literally, we're still going to have to do that. Even moving into next school year, the biggest thing we can't do is let our guard down no matter what we do. I mean, we're seeing increased cases everywhere. So right now we may be in that little trend, but we have to stay vigilant to it. But when things happen, you have to step back and take a breath and then move forward. And move forward with very good laid out plans and no seductive shortcuts. And that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in our school district. We have too many good people that are involved in that planning. It's not something that Kirk Carpenter's plan. Kirk Carpenter's informed many times of the plan, and that's because of the great people that are in their positions, understand their role, and understand their role in situations no matter what the emergency is.
Well, like any large organization with hundreds of employees, there's a lot of moving parts for any decision that is made. But, Mr. Carpenter, we're out of time this morning together. I appreciate, as always, you coming over and talking with me and updating our audiences about things that are going on at Aztec Schools. And again, as we look towards next month, we hope to maybe have your next superintendent joining you for the program.
Well, I think he'll be more than happy to do that, and he'll be a better face to look at for the people out there in the viewing audience, and brings a lot to the table. He really does. So I'm excited about it, and I know he'd be more than willing. I've touched base with him, and excited to, as they say, turn the reins over when it's appropriate, and it'll happen very soon. But we're just rest assured to all the people that he's going to be a fantastic superintendent, fantastic leader, and things will be in great shape for Aztec Schools moving forward.
Well, and again, kudos to the search committee, a lot of long hours in evaluating all the candidates, but we look forward to meeting him and having him here with you next time. So thank you for coming over.
Thanks, Scott. It's always a pleasure. And again, we do deeply appreciate the opportunity just to share some of the things happening. And it's been a pleasure over the years. And I think one more show is what I'll have left with you. But
who's counting?
Who's counting? Exactly. Who's counting? But I'm not going anywhere. So thanks a lot, Scott.
Well, I'm glad that you're not going anywhere. And I know we're going to keep in touch. But in the meantime, I'll miss these monthly visits because we have some great conversations about education in New Mexico. So thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Kirk Carpenter, my guest, superintendent of schools with the Aztec School District. My guest this morning here on KSJE. The time right now is 8:43. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.